Hare Krishna, dear devotees, once again I welcome you all for joining this mid-morning session in Bhakti Sangha Japa conference call. I would like to start by sharing a quote by Srila Prabhupada ji. Chanakya Pandit says that if there is one tree in the forest producing nice aromatic flower, that one tree can glorify the whole forest by the flavor of its flower. Similarly, if there is one tree in the whose captivity there is a little fire, that one tree can burn into ashes the whole forest. So this simile is applicable anywhere. In a family, if there is one good boy, he can glorify the whole family. And similarly, if there is a bad boy, he can turn the whole family into ashes. Good morning, dear devotees. Today we're very fortunate to have His Grace Jayanand Prabhuji. Prabhuji will be enlightening us on the four Vaishnava Sampradayas. Hare Krishna, Jayanand Prabhuji, please accept my humble obeisances. Thank you for giving your valuable time and wonderful association this morning. Waiting eagerly to hear from you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Guru and Garanga ki jai. Please take over the call, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Yeah. Thank you, Mataji. You're able to see the screen and hear me as well?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Okay. Thank you again for this opportunity. So, in the next four Fridays, we will discuss the major Vedanta philosophies. Some of which, for today, we will do the pastimes of Sri Madhvacharya and the philosophy of Tattvavada, which is popularly called as Dvaita, but originally it was called as Tattvavada, and which the Dvaita stands for exclusive dualism. And this entire session this morning will be devoted to Madhvacharya. The next week, we will do Sri Ramanujacharya and Vishishta Dvaita. Following that, I will briefly touch upon Shuddha Dvaita and Kevala Dvaita, and but then we will move on to Achintya Bheda Veda in the third session. And in the fourth session, we will do a comparative analysis of different Vedanta philosophies and conclude the session. Some of the philosophies will be a little more detailed because there are a lot of commentaries available, especially for today's session on Madhvacharya and Tattvavada, and the next one on Ramanujacharya and Achintya Bheda Veda. We have a lot of available on this, but there is relatively smaller amounts available for some of the philosophies where there is a commentary for the Vedanta Sutra, but it's not like there is a commentary for many of the other scriptures. So in these sessions, we will first start with the biography of these acharyas here, because the activities and the pastimes of the acharyas are very closely linked with the philosophy that they have expounded. So the first 30 minutes, we will cover the activities of Sri Madhvacharya. And then the next latter part of this session, we will do the intricacies of Tattvavada to an extent, what can be covered in 1 hour. So thank you again for this opportunity. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Divim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mubilayet Ashtaprayeshwabhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttamashloki Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki Om Jnana Timirandase Jnana Vyashalaya Chakshurunyunyatam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vaancha Kalpadrubhyascha Kripasindubhyeracha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivedanta Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I offer my humble obeisances to all the Vaishnavas here. And let's get started. So, Sri Madhvacharya, his father's name was Madhyageha Bhatta, and mother's name was Vedavati. They first had one daughter and two sons. The two sons died early, and all this was in early 1200 AD. Their family deity was Lord Ananteshwara in Udupi, which is in the state of Karnataka now. And in the picture here is the deity of Lord Ananteshwara as seen today in the temple in the city of Udupi. It was a time where there were serious misinterpretations of the scriptures, and Madhyageha Bhatta, he wanted a son who would declare an all-round supremacy of God based on scriptures. There were different schools of thought at the time which were producing a lot of confusion. And what did Madhyageha Bhatta do was he did 12 long years of devotional service to Lord Ananteshwara, and a lot of penance in those 12 years on Ashuddha Dasami, which is on a Vijaya Dashami of 1238 AD. Mukhya Prana, who is expansion of Lord Vayu, the wind god, entered the body of the newborn child. So after the child was born, the jiva soul, the individual soul who was living during the pregnancy, the expansion of the wind god, Mukhya Prana, he took the place as the child after the child was born. The child name was Vasudeva, and the parents hoped that the child would become a great devotee of the God of the universe, Lord Vasudeva. And in the picture here, this is the temple complex of Lord Ananteshwara in Udupi, as seen in modern times. But Sri Madhvacharya, as a child, Vasudeva, he started exhibiting great powers. One of the first things that the relatives observed was that the kid had extraordinary digestive power. Like within a year of birth, the mother, Vedavati, had left the baby to go somewhere out, and the child was crying for hunger, but no one noticed. But then the baby saw some baked gram, which was actually meant, it is not something that humans can really digest. It was meant for the bulls. And the child ate those baked gram and satisfied the hunger. And when the mother came back, was very astounded to see that how the child could have eaten something that was meant for the bull, and was even able to digest it. So that was like the first instance where the child's extraordinary digestive power was observed by the family members. But many of the things that we would be seeing in today's discussion is, you would see the extraordinary feats of these great acharyas. It would appear fantastic for those who are not able to understand the position and the power of these exalted personalities. But for a devout Vaishnava, these feats will not sound fantastic, because they would be able to see what all the devotees of the Lord can accomplish. There is the child also exhibited high endurance. Like as a one-year-old child, the child suddenly caught the tip of a tail of a bull and went to the field. As the bull was plowing the field, the child just went along with the bull, stayed there for a day and had no fatigue at all. So the child exhibited extraordinary endurance. And this is something that you will see throughout the activities of Madhvacharya, where he was very prominent and he was really well known for wrestling. So once the family, they went to a family wedding from their town near Udupi, and they went to a different city. But then the young boy, he just left unnoticed from the wedding place. And then he went straight to a temple called as Shankara Narayana, and there he worshipped Lord Narayan. And then he went to a temple called as Chandra Mauleshwara and offered obeisances to that deity there. And then went to Lord Ananteshwara and offered prayers, and just stayed in the temple for the rest of the night. And the parents got very scared that the kid is missing. And then when they came back to Udupi, they found the boy in Lord Ananteshwara's temple. And then asked him and then about it. And then he said that he wanted to come and see the deities. So you would see in all these instances have been pulled from all this entire activities have been pulled from a biography written just after Sri Madhvacharya's disappearance, and it was called a Sumadhva Vijaya. That's where I prepared this lecture from. So after that, it was time for education. So Madhvacharya started his on an auspicious day. The parents started his education on a lesson on Sanskrit alphabets. The next day, and then as these lessons were progressing, the father came and asked him to repeat the lessons from the previous day. But the boy said that it was really unnecessary because he's already mastered the subject, so there was no need to repeat the previous lessons. And then he just narrated things even beyond what was being taught to him. So the first ever encounter of Sri Madhvacharya was a debate with a scholar called Shiva Bhatta. And this Shiva Bhatta, Madhvacharya disagreed with him and had the first debate with him. And he came out victorious. And his father saw how Madhvacharya was very... intellectually very profound, but in addition to intellectual profoundness, he exhibited many yogic powers. So Madhvacharya was a yogi, and at age 8 he exhibited his yogic powers, where he went to a hill and then he jumped off the hill. That hill is even today there. It is called as Durga Betta, and he landed on the top of the roof of a house. And then and everybody was like stunned by that, how the kid could jump from a hill on a hill like that. And in another occasion, the child made a dry plant sprout, and then he replanted it after that. So he has, throughout the history, you would see many, many such exhibitions of his yogic powers. And at the age of 8, he underwent Upanayana. The Brahmin initiation was done at age 8, as was the custom during those times. And during his school time, Madhvacharya excelled in a number of sport activities, which he found very attractive. The things that are mentioned in Sumadhva Vijaya is running race, high jump, long jump, swimming, and wrestling. He was a great wrestler, and he was extremely strong. And their family friend's child was sick, and in spite of different medications, the child had a chronic headache. But Madhvacharya, he blew air into the sick friend's ear and just cured him of chronic headache by just blowing air. And then he started beginning to give right translations of Upanishads whose translations were not available at the time. In about for some time ago, out of the many hundreds of Upanishads, only about 10 were selected for translations. And that was written before by the first Shankaracharya. And Madhvacharya here started writing translations for other Upanishads and taught his own teacher at the time the secret meaning of an Upanishad called as Aitreya Upanishad. And this he gave it as Guru Dakshina, because at the end of the class, end of the teaching session, the student usually gives some kind of a Dakshina to the teacher, and he gave the secret meaning of Aitreya Upanishad to the teacher. So as this was progressing, at that time, Madhvacharya accepted a guru, and the guru's name was Achyuta Preksha. And at that time, it was hard to find Vaishnava teachers in that area, because at the time, the Buddhism has been completely routed, and by Shankaracharya, and Kevala Advaita was the main philosophy at that time. Ramanujacharya was prominent in some of the areas as well throughout India. But in the region there was one teacher called as Achyuta Preksha, and he was trained in the Kevala Advaita philosophy of Shankaracharya. And the teacher really liked Madhvacharya. And as a boy, the boy Vasudeva, which was his birth name, he asked sannyasa from his teacher. But the parents, where Madhvacharya's parents did not like this, that what Vasudeva was doing. And so they came and then told the teacher, Achyuta Preksha, it's not really nice of him to take the child like this. They have only a boy whom they are relying on. And so the parents came and took back Vasudeva back to their hometown. And then Madhvacharya now started having debates with their parents. Okay, the parents were not very happy with this, and they were mentioning to Madhvacharya that the duty of the son is to take care of their older parents. But Madhvacharya had different opinions, but then the argument was going on. But after some time, Madhvacharya came up with a proposal that let them have a new boy, a new child, and he will wait until they have a new child, and then the next son of theirs will take care of them while he can go accept sannyasa. But in due course of time, they had a new son born, and Madhvacharya said, okay, this is the moment, and this new boy will take care of you all. I gotta go, you know, because I have many activities to perform, and let me go. And then the parents reluctantly gave him the permission, and then he went back to Achyuta Preksha, and then he took sannyasa and became a monk with a new name given to him at the time called as Purna Pragna. That was his name, Purna Pragna. And at that time, he told his teacher, Achyuta Preksha, that he wanted to go to River Ganga to perform ablutions. And but the teacher, Achyuta Preksha, liked Vasudeva, Purna Pragna, his new name, quite a bit. And then he told Madhvacharya, do not go, just stay here. I cannot really be separated from you. And then Madhvacharya, then he immediately brought the river Ganga to Udupi. And even now it happens in a place, it happens once in 12 years, suddenly the water comes there. And in this way that he didn't have to travel and leave the teacher. So this was a kind of a bondage between the teacher and the student. So at that time, the teacher asked him to give him, as part of his sannyasa exercise, gave him a book to study. And the book is called as Ishta Siddhi. It is a renowned work in the Shankaracharya's school system. And then as Madhvacharya started reading the first paragraph, he told his teacher that there are 32 defects right in the first paragraph, even before he can proceed anything further with this. And the teacher was very upset with him because Madhvacharya is saying that there are defects in the first paragraph itself. And then the teacher was upset. He just got up and then he just left. He said, I'm not going to teach. I'm just going to leave. And then the teacher left. At that time, Madhvacharya, he took over the teacher's class and he started teaching himself. He said, okay, the teacher is gone, but let the class not stop. And so Madhvacharya himself started to teach. At that time, there was some confusion about some of the Bhagavatam shlokas because there were a few versions of the shlokas circulating. But Madhvacharya said that he took one of that shloka and then he said, this is the correct version. And the teacher, when he came back, he said, and on what basis do you say that this is the correct shloka? Okay. And then Madhvacharya, he started reciting the Canto 1, Chapter 5 of Srimad Bhagavatam verbatim. He has not even seen that chapter before, but he started narrating it spontaneously, the whole chapter. At that time, the teacher asked him, how do you remember this whole chapter? We have never taught you this Srimad Bhagavatam, so how do you remember? And Madhvacharya said that he remembered it from his previous lifetime. He already has learned the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so he's able to remember it and recite it. And the teacher was very impressed. And at that time, the teacher said that Madhvacharya is now going to succeed the guru's throne. And then he titled him with the name called as Ananda Tirtha. And the equivalent name for it, there is a sukta in the Rig Veda where the meaning of this Ananda Tirtha is called as Madhva. And from now on, for the remainder of his pastimes, he will be called as Madhvacharya. But his name is called as Ananda Tirtha. So first, when he was born, he was called as Vasudeva. And then when he was initiated, he was called as Purna Prajna. And then when he succeeded the throne of his guru, he was called as Ananda Tirtha. But he will be popularly called from now on as Madhvacharya. And this is based on a particular sukta in the Rig Veda. So, and then the teacher Achyuta Preksha himself became a student of Sri Madhvacharya and started to learn the scriptures under Madhvacharya's guidance. So now the teacher assigned him a new task. And what was it is that because Madhvacharya was constantly pointing defects in Kevaladvaita. Kevaladvaita is the philosophy preached by Shankaracharya. I'm distinguishing this by using the word Kevaladvaita because the word Advaita is used in many contexts and it should not be misinterpreted. So for instance, Vallabhacharya, we will see later, will use the word for his philosophy called as Shuddha Advaita, which is a Vaishnava philosophy. And then we ourselves have Advaita as part of the Achintya Bheda Bheda as well. You can see that in the Brahma Samhita, Advaitam, Achyutam, Anantarupam. So in this way, I'm distinguishing the Shankaracharya's Mayavada philosophy there as to call this as Kevaladvaita. And so because he was constantly pointing faults in the Kevaladvaita philosophy of Shankaracharya, so the teacher asked him to write a new commentary for the Vedanta Sutra. So said, well, okay, if you keep on disagreeing, let you yourself write a commentary for the Vedanta Sutra, but Madhvacharya and also the Upanishads. So after this thing, Madhvacharya, they had a meal and then there were like about 200 bananas, ripe bananas lying there. And Madhvacharya just ate all the 200 bananas as dessert after the thing. You know, he had extraordinary digestive powers. And he then said he would want to tour South India. And there he went to another place called as Sringeri. There was a mutt there of Shankaracharya. And in this mutt, there was a leading monk there called as Vidya Shankara. And he engaged with him about his debate about the Shankara's philosophy and how it was not supported by the majority of the Vedas verses, and that selective verses have been taken which go in that direction, but majority of the verses of in the Vedas, they don't support the philosophy. And he engaged with the debate with him. And then Madhvacharya then visited Kanyakumari, and in Kanyakumari at that time the Chaturmasya began, so he did not want to leave the place. So he stayed there for 4 months in Kanyakumari, engaging in debates with different scholars in that area. And then he started moving north. He came to Srirangam And there he offered obeisances to Lord Ranganath. And then he stayed there for a little while. And then he went to north to River Payaswini. And there were some debate going on about the Vedas. And then Madhvacharya explained the meaning of the Vedas. And then they asked him on what basis he's saying these things. And then he was telling there that he told them that every word in the Vedas, they have three meanings. And every word in the Mahabharata has 10 meanings. And in the Vishnu Sahasranama that appears in the Mahabharata, in the Shanti Parva, has 100 meanings. And they asked him, okay, if that is the case, then why don't you tell for one of the words, at least the first word in the Vishnu Sahasranama, why don't you give 100 meanings? And Madhvacharya said, okay, I will do it in the condition that after I tell the 100 meanings of the first word, then you will be able to repeat all that. And then he took the first word of the Vishnu Sahasranama, Vishwam Vishnu Vashatkaraha Bhutabhavya Bhagat Prabhu. So he took the first word in that, which is called as Vishwa. And then he gave 100 meanings to it. But those scholars who were listening to it, they could not repeat all those 100 meanings after that. But then he went to Kerala, where there were a number of Brahmins there and Madhvacharya pointed many grammatical mistakes in how they were reciting a particular sukta in Rigveda and established his philosophy there. And at that time, he decided that it's time now to go get some direct interaction with a spiritual master. So he decided to go to Badrinath. So he decided to take a tour to Badrinath. And at that time, he wrote the first commentary there for the Bhagavad Gita. And in Badrinath, by the Lord Narayana temple there. At that time, he had a conversation with Lord Narayana himself, but then he decided that he wanted to go meet Veda Vyasa, sage Veda Vyasa, who is in the higher Badri, okay, the Himalayan hills there. He wanted to go to the higher Badri and have a conversation with sage Veda Vyasa. So he then he started walking towards the higher Badri. At that time, one of his students started following him, but he could not really keep pace with Madhvacharya because he was walking so fast and he could not keep pace. And then Madhvacharya told his student to go back to the mutt near the Badrinath temple in lower Badri and that he won't be able to come with him. And Madhvacharya went alone to higher Badri, and then he suddenly saw Veda Vyasa sitting next to a tree in the higher Badri. And Madhvacharya started having a big conversation with Sage Veda Vyasa. So, and then Veda Vyasa had disclosed to him the meaning of the Vedanta and discussed the philosophy with him. And this is the reason why in our Sampradaya, you will find after Krishna, you find Brahma. And after Brahma, you find Narada Muni. After Narada Muni, you find Veda Vyasa. And then from Vyasa, we go directly to Madhvacharya because that is the lineage. Okay. So, and then after that, Madhvacharya took departure from Sri Vyasadeva. And then he started having a conversation with the Narayana Rishi. So this is as Naranarayana Rishi. They reside in that area in higher Badri. And so Madhvacharya had a long conversation with him. At that time, he suddenly started remembering all the expansions of the Lord. And then he started offering one prayer to each of the expansions, like for Hamsavatar, Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, and so on. He started giving a prayer for each of one of the expansions of the Lord. So for many, many expansions, he offered prayers after he met with Lord Narayana Rishi there. And then he decided to come back to Udupi. And when he was coming back through the river Godavari. In Godavari, there he met a particular scholar. His name was called as Shobhana Bhatta. And after engaging with the scholar, he was defeated by Madhvacharya. And then he became his sannyasa disciple and got the name as Padmanabha Tirtha. And we will find all these names in our disciplic succession. And then another scholar called as Sama Shastri, and he was also defeated, and he was became a disciple of Madhvacharya, and he got the name Narahari Tirtha. And after that, he returned back to Udupi. And when he returned back to Udupi, then he started writing the commentary for the Vedanta Sutra, which he completed. And that is called as Anubhashya. The Anubhashya of the way of Madhvacharya, which and the Sampradaya was, and he established the Sampradaya there by having tattooing metal emblems of conch shell and disc on those who are in the Sampradaya. So at that time, there was a boatman who was caught in a storm. Madhvacharya, what he did was he just waved his upper cloth and then he just controlled the storm. And the boatman gave two huge pieces of Gopi Chandan as a gift to Madhvacharya. And Madhvacharya, by his yogic insights, knew that inside the Gopi Chandan, there were two deities. And one of the deity was that of Krishna and the other deity was that of Balarama. And as soon as he touched the deity of Krishna, the deity became so heavy that 30 people had to come and carry it. But Madhvacharya, because he was so strong in his physical prowess, that he could just carry the deity by himself. He installed the deity of Lord Balarama in a place called as Odabandheshwara. And then he installed Krishna in the temple of Udupi. And then there were many other fantastic deeds that are explained in the book called Sumadva Vijaya, where in one of his trips, he had met with a Muhammadan king and he conversed with him in fluent Persian. And people were wondering how Madhvacharya knew Persian, but he was able to speak fluent Persian. And then he crossed a river and... that is Farsi, that's the actual language. But since the translation, what I had in Sumadva Vijaya called it as Persian, and I've just written it like that, but it is, the language is right now called is called as Farsi. So he crossed the river by walk, and then he crossed, and then he had to cross a river, and then he just crossed it by just walking on top of the river with his disciples. In another occasion, there were a number of robbers who came near his disciples, and Madhvacharya, he just asked his disciples to stay a little away, and then he just made the robbers fight with each other and finish themselves. And in another case, there were a set of robbers. He just physically wrestled with them and took his disciples on the pilgrimage. In another instance, a tiger came to attack as they were walking, and he just pushed the tiger, which was attacking to a distance, and the tiger then just went away. And in this way, he has many, many instances where he was, he just exhibited his not intellectual prowess, but also his physical prowess. At that time, he wrote the famous commentary on the Mahabharata called as the Mahabharata Tatparya Nirnaya. Some of the things that I've taken here for the philosophical part is also taken from this book called as Mahabharata Tatparya Nirnaya. In the Mahabharata Tatparya Nirnaya, he has given many explanations for many of the intricate things in Mahabharata to get the true meaning, but it is a custom in to usually recite the Ramayana before you recite the Mahabharata. So Madhvacharya first wrote in his first part the Ramayana Tatparya Nirnaya. So the first section of Mahabharata Tatparya Nirnaya contains the commentary for Ramayana, and where he discloses many, many things that have confused people in Ramayana. He gives explanation for it. These books are actually available in many of the Madhva scholars have written translations for this, and which we can find if you go even to the into Bangalore city, some of their places you can find the translations for these. And there he explains like why about the killing of Bali, and how Lord Rama was beyond any mistake, because the personality of Godhead is complete and without any flaws. And he gives many explanations how Lord Rama was just put the arrow in the feet of Bali, and that is not actually enough to actually kill a person. But then Bali had a lengthy conversation with Lord Ramachandra, and he even offered him that he could get that he can revive him back, but Bali wanted to die in the hands of the Supreme Lord. So there are many things like that, and So that was a great book on Madhva Mahabharata Tatpari Nirnaya. And then in another instance, he crossed a river without his cloth getting wet. And when he went to Kashi, at that time, he suddenly, all his disciples were thinking that they were very strong. So Madhvacharya told all his disciples, okay, all of you fight against just me alone. And then he had a wrestling match with him versus all his disciples. And then he tackled all his disciples in within a few minutes. And then there was a pujari in a Shiva temple in Kashi. He had a dream that he should invite Madhvacharya and offer him a feast. And then Madhvacharya happily ate feast in that after being invited by that pujari. And then he went to this place called as Ishupata Kshetra. And in that place, a king offered him 1,000 bananas, and then he just ate them all. And instantly, without any problem. And then he stimulated trees to give flowers by singing beautiful songs. And he was so well-versed in the Gana Shastra. And this was in a place called as Govishaya. And then he initiated a king called as Jayasimha into the Sampradaya. So at that time, Madhvacharya's younger brother, his parents had passed away, and then he also came to Madhvacharya and got initiated and got his name as Vishnu Tirtha. And he was extremely scholarly, and he in turn initiated two other people called as Vyasa Tirtha and Aniruddha Tirtha. In this way, you will find some of these names in our disciplic succession, in our Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. And Madhvacharya at that time established 8 mutts around the deities, and all the mutts are surrounded by the central temple is that of the Krishna in Udupi. And then on another occasion, he went to the shore, because Udupi is not far from the shore. He went to near Mangalore, and he he was giving a lecture by the beach, and then the waves were making too much sound, which was disturbing his lecture. And then he just looked at the waves, and he just quelled the waves for some time until he finishes his lecture. And the lecture was on Aitreya Upanishad. And then he wrote a book called as Krishnamrita Maharnava, which includes a lot of details from different Puranas. And then in another instance, he revived a dead bull by composing shlokas called as Dvadasha Shostra, a stotra, which is about 12 expansions of the Lord, starting with Matsya, Kurma, and so on, and 12 expansions. And then he revived the bull after reciting those shlokas. And in his later pastimes, once he was inside the Udupi temple praying to Krishna, and all the doors were closed, and he was inside for a long time, and there was no sound coming from it. And one of his disciples was very curious, what was Madhvacharya doing? So through a small window, he was trying to look inside, and he was astounded to see that there were 3 people sitting in front of Lord Krishna in the Udupi temple. And one was Bhim, one was Hanuman, and Madhvacharya. So he appeared in 3 personalities, because Hanuman, Vayu, Hanuman, Bhim, Madhva, they're all in the expansions, Vayu's expansion as Hanuman, and then he expanded as Bhim, and in this age of Kaliyas, Madhvacharya. So in another instance, he composed 2 shlokas called as Nakha Stuti on Lord Narasimha. On 1317, on a Shuddha Navami, he was around 80 years old at the time. As he was reciting again his own commentary of the Aitareya Upanishad, suddenly from the sky, there were heaps of flowers that fell from the sky. And then it covered Madhvacharya. And then when the disciples went and looked at that pile of flowers, Madhvacharya had disappeared in those flowers. And thus ends the Sumadhva Vijaya of the glorious pastimes of Sri Madhvacharya. And now let's start looking at the philosophy. So this is like a basic chart, okay, of the Tattvavada, which covers the philosophy of what is called as the Pancha Bheda, okay, that how the differences among the 3 entities that we will be considering here. Okay, for the remainder of the lecture, it will be only metaphysics. And then we will end with some of the precepts of his Vedanta Sutra in Anubhashya. So there are 3 entities here. One is the soul, other is matter, and other is Ishvara. Ishvara here is Narayana, okay? Or the famous word that Madhvacharya and his disciples use throughout in all his on all their commentaries is Hari. So you have soul, matter, and you have Hari or Narayana. And so the first thing here is you have Ishvara, which is God, okay, or Narayana, with his primary attributes, okay? And then, which is the Lord is fundamentally different from the soul and the matter. Okay, so this is the first difference. The second, so the Lord is different from the soul, Lord is different from matter. The second thing that we can see here is the soul amongst themselves are also not equal. That means one soul has superior attributes compared to another soul. So that means there is a difference even between the souls. Okay, and I will explain that in the next, expand this thing in the next set of slides. The third is the difference between soul and matter. So any soul is different from matter. And the next difference is that each one matter is also not different from, is also different from other matter. So difference within matter, difference within among different souls, and difference between God and soul, God and matter. So this is called as fivefold differences between God and soul, God and matter, soul and soul, matter and matter, soul and matter. So this is a fivefold difference which is being covered here. And that this soul is some kind of a shadow, some kind of a reflection of the personality of God. But the soul is absolutely different in quality and quantity from that of the Lord. That means that even the spiritual attributes of the soul, okay, both in quality, in number and quality and quantity, okay, so in everything, the soul is inferior to that of God. That means, like, if Lord just and how we understand this, okay, is by three methods. One is, and Madhvacharya accepts all three methods, okay. First is Pratyaksha, which is sense perception. And through sense perception, Madhvacharya states that we can come to logical, we can come to conclusions, okay, conclusions, as long as those sense perception made statements do not contradict the scriptures. Anumana is again inference by induction, method of induction. Again, one can try to come up with different conclusions as long as it doesn't contradict the scriptures. So he takes all these as valid methods of gaining knowledge. One is Pratyaksha, Anumana, and other is Shabda. So Shabda is directly taking from the scriptures. This is revealed knowledge, which literally means sound. It is spoken by a trustworthy person and originates from the Godhead through disciplic succession. And they've given references for this. 8 Bhagavatam, 8.3.15, 1.4.20.29, 8.20.11. And these are all illustrated in Sri Jiva Goswami's Tattva Sandarbha. Okay, later. So this is the second aspect of the Tattvavada philosophy. Okay, that all three are valid pramanas or basis for and gain knowledge. The third thing that we can understand from Tattvavada is about the reality of world. Okay, so that in all these instances, we will see that there will be differences between Achintya Bheda and Tattvavada, but we will cover that in the last lecture, the fourth of the seminar series, where I will do a clear comparative analysis of the major philosophies. We will take Kevala Dvaita, Vishishta Dvaita, Shuddha Dvaita, Achintya Bheda Bheda, and Dvaita or Tattvavada. So we'll cover that in the last. But today we will exclusively focus it for this without doing much comparisons today. But the third important aspect of this is that the reality of the world. The first thing Madhvacharya is saying here in his Anubhashi, as well as in commentaries to different Upanishads, is that there is a diversity of creation. That means that this creation is real, And it exists. It is not some illusion or something. It is there. It is there for all practical purpose. And in fact, it is like a field for spiritual development for the conditioned souls. The conditioned souls have been put in this for their spiritual development. And it is a totally real phenomenon. And in this material world, God is imminent, okay, in this material world as well. And he also transcends all the limitations of the material world as well. So he's imminent and he's transcendent. And he gives in his, that there is concrete evidence for creation in his Dwadasha Stotra. There he gives evidence that there is there is evidence for creation. And in this way, he takes all this environment as part of the divine creation of the Lord. And in this way, he is an environmentalist in that perspective, but it is transcendental in the sense that he says in his verses that all this have been created by the Lord in order to for the spiritual development for the conditioned souls, and that there is within this world there is heterogeneity at all levels. There are differences between the different planetary systems at different levels. You see here there is a heterogeneity, and no two things in this material world is same. Everything is absolutely different. Okay. So the next aspect of this is called as Taratamya, which means the philosophy of gradation. So in this philosophy of gradation, you will see that there is a hierarchy of all contents in this universe. Okay. So it is the entire universe, everything is hierarchical. That means that there is an elaborate hierarchy among the gods. Okay. So in his Mahabharata Tatpari Nirnayam, so when he first starts the Ramayana Tatpari Nirnayam, there you'll see verses there where he talks about, he gives gradations about not only just the rank of different gods, but also how much fold one is lower than the other. Okay, so there is an elaborate hierarchy of gods. There's an elaborate hierarchy of the rishis. That means that there are rishis at a higher level, the next level. So there is a rank for everybody. And there is a hierarchy among the human species. Among the different human species, there is a hierarchy. There is a hierarchy among animal species. There is a hierarchy among demons. I'm not talking within just the humans that we see. I'm talking there are many human species and there's a hierarchy among them. And then there is a hierarchy among souls. Okay, that means all souls, the lower species is being controlled by the higher species. For example, the demigods, the wind god, the rain god, they all control the human being. So in this way, there is a hierarchy. The only place where Madhvacharya says that there is no hierarchy is that there is no differences among the Vishnu Tattva. That means that absolutely there is no difference in any of the qualities between Matsya, Rama, and so on. So this is the next aspect of Tattvavada. Then the next one is called as the categorization of souls. That means that the jiva souls embodied jiva souls, which are predominantly in the material mode of goodness, they are fit for salvation and for spiritual progress. That means that they will be able to behave in such a way that they can, that they will be fit for liberation at some point of time, in due course of time. But those jiva souls which are embodied in a material body which is conditioned predominantly in the mode of passion, okay, these souls, he calls them as indifferent souls. These souls, they are not convinced by the greatness of God. They can hear it, but they will never be convinced. And they will stay here in this material for forever. Okay, and then the third is the jiva souls, which are in a body conditioned by the mode of ignorance, and these souls, he says, they are condemned because it is not easy for these souls to change course of action. And so, for all practical purpose, they will be going towards hellish existence. So, in due course of time, they will go towards more hellish planets. So, that means, and it is not just for these jiva souls, but even the liberated souls, those who have gone to Vaikuntha, even there are gradations. That means, let's say that you have a flower in Vaikuntha versus, some other being. Okay, let's say, a servant of Lord Rama, then there are gradations even among those living beings in the liberated. So even the liberated, in liberation itself, both in quality and quantity, there is absolute difference. So this whole philosophy, that you'll find there is absolute difference in quality and quantity at every level, whether it is in the material world or in the liberated state. So the individual soul, so is some kind of a shadow or a minuscule. So the individual soul, whether in liberated state or in the conditioned state, has a minuscule number of qualities as that of the Lord. So let's say the Lord has the quality of purity or truthfulness or mercy. So all these qualities are infinitely present in quantity and quality with the personality of God. Whereas in the living beings, all these qualities are a fraction of these qualities are present, and in extremely small quantities as well. So neither in quantity nor in quality, we can match that of the Lord Hari. So with this, the tenets of his Anubhashya, this is my last slide, Madhvacharya says that before even beginning the process of learning about the God, first you need a devotion and the divine grace of the Lord. So it precedes the general understanding. So unless one has the mercy of the Supreme Lord, one cannot even proceed in this field. So otherwise, they will be perpetually here in this material world. Second, that the devotion, and again, that is, you have to work towards it, and the divine grace, both are required simultaneously for you to uncritically study and understand the Vedas, to understand the supremacy of God as found in the scriptures. Third is that the devotion and the divine grace of the Lord is required for deep meditation of the Supreme God, to understand the Lord's majesty and to get the direct vision of the God. And after you get the direct vision of the Lord, then you again need devotion. That means you have to practice. The divine grace alone is not sufficient here. You have to practice, and your activities are required. On top of it, the divine grace is also required. So both simultaneously, when it is there, you will be able to directly experience the God's supremacy with utmost warmth of love and attraction. Such devotion and divine grace will bring about salvation. So devotion in the state of salvation becomes spontaneous and an end in itself. Thus ends this first seminar on Sri Madhvacharya and the philosophy of Tattvavada. So I will stop here, and I offer my humble obeisances to all the Vaishnavas here. Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Thank you again for this opportunity. If there's any discussion points, we can go on. Here and there, if there is very elaborate comparisons between this and Achintya Bheda Bheda, I will explain briefly, but then I'll stop because I've kept it separately. I'll make charts and explain it in the last session. So thank you, and we'll open this for discussion. Thank you.
Hare Krishna, please accept my humble obeisance in Jayanam Prabhuji. Absolutely, absolutely very, very beautiful, wonderful class, and very beautiful PPT. Thank you for you. Please do share the PPT with us. Miss Gail Mataji, please go ahead.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare.
Just a couple questions. I just want to confirm that the differences that you described among the jivas, the conditioned souls, is because you were saying, I think, that you know there's some that have greater qualities or potencies than others, like demigods versus ordinary jivas, right?
Yeah, and even among no two living entities are the same according to Madhvacharya.
Right. So these differences, I just want to confirm that we're saying that actually those differences are in their, how should I say, swabhav, or their material nature, not in their spiritual nature.
Both. We are not talking our philosophy here. This is Madhvacharya's Tattvavada. There it eternally exists. These, whether material, spiritual, everywhere, the absolute difference exists.
Oh, so this is only according to Madhvacharya, but our this sampradaya.
Whole lecture, no, this is nothing to do with our sampradaya. This is the whole lecture is on Tattvavada.
Okay, so according to Madhvacharya, there are even differences in the spiritual nature of the jivas itself.
Correct.
Of
themselves. Yeah, because there is a gradation even there.
Hmm.
It is a philosophy of absolute difference in quality and quantity at all times. It is exactly opposite to what Shankaracharya has described, where there is absolute non-difference in all states. So, and there is no state there. All there is just Brahman, spiritual effulgence. So this is exactly opposite to that.
Okay, so just repeating, according to Madhvacharya, Tattvavada, I think you said, right?
Tattvavada is the philosophy, yeah.
There is
philosophical criticism. Vada means he's trying to argue based on that. So they're just calling it as Tattva. Tattva means philosophy, that's all. And according to them, this is the only true philosophy.
Mm-hmm. And so, there is not only difference in the material nature of jivas, but in their inherent spiritual nature as well.
Correct. Very good. Very well.
Okay.
The spiritual constitutional position of two different souls are inherently different.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Wow. And then second question, Prabhu, last question is, in among Vaishnavas, we always hear that out of humility not even just humility, but just out of not wanting to get distracted from meditation on Krishna, we like to avoid debate, but that didn't seem to be Madhvacharya's mood. He seemed like he had a career of debating.
Yeah, because that was the predominant tenet at the time, and it was the way by which people had them become Vaishnavas. Like, that was the method. So usually if somebody loses in the debate, then they will get initiated by the person whoever defeated. So Madhvacharya actually converted, even before that, even Shankaracharya, many, many Buddhists in the country, that's the way he did, by debates. Debate was the predominant method by which people got converted.
Oh, so to become a disciple,
yeah,
you would have to engage in debate with your prospective guru.
If you don't accept it on your own. So, like, for example, let's say there is some examples here. Let's say there was in a particular place, let's say there is a great scholar. We had many examples today. And if they want to say that theirs is the correct philosophy, then they won't accept what Madhvacharya says. Then Madhvacharya says, okay, let's debate. And then and they all lost with Madhvacharya. And then they join Madhvacharya Sampradaya. Either they lose or they run away somewhere, something, Sampradaya.
Oh, actually, this is really the last question, I think.
No problem.
I just wonder, why, maybe this question isn't even answerable, but I'm just curious about the fact that, what purpose did his physical prowess serve?
He was, the thing is, Madhvacharya, see, again, it is with his constitutional position. With his constitutional position, he was Hanuman, he was Bhim, and he was Vayu. So Bhim was had extraordinary strength among the Pandavas, and he was so known for eating voraciously and also in terms of his strength. And the same thing was with Lord Hanuman as well. He was so powerful, and all those qualities exhibited in Madhvacharya, and he discloses his identity in all many of his scriptures. If you look at his Mahabharata Tatparinaya, he clearly states that he is Hanuman and he is Bhim.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, and he's just exhibiting his constitutional identity.
Yeah, right. Thank you so much, Prabhu.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna, dear devotees, if you have any questions or realizations, please go ahead and stand.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranam, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you so much for this very elaborate session. It was, I think it was definitely you, the Tattvavad concept was explained a little concisely. So Prabhuji, could you please repeat the last slide? I tried to read what you have put in here, but yeah, I didn't understand.
So, all this particular slide is not to do with Tattvavada specifically. The Tattvavada is actually there in the previous slides. This is just the summary of what he's introducing in the Anubhashi of the Vedanta Sutra, where he's saying that you need both your individual effort and you need the grace of the Lord simultaneously, even before you start your process of moving towards liberation. The second one, during the time when you're studying the different scriptures, again, you have to put effort and you need divine grace at the same time. And the third thing, after to gain vision of the Lord, again, you have to do the same thing. And even after liberation, that is the same thing. So you have to put effort at all phases and have the grace of the Lord at the same time. So either if you just have one of the two, it is not going to work.
Yeah. Okay. So what is, thank you so much. I understood it now. So what is the Anubhashya? What does that mean?
Anubhashya is the, Bhashya is commentary. Anubhashya is the commentary of Madhvacharya in for the Vedanta Sutra. So the Vedanta Sutra, popularly called as the Brahma Sutra, has four chapters. And the four chapters, different philosophers have written commentaries about it. Among the existing commentaries, they have written some of the commentaries. There are really no existing Shaivite commentaries on it. So there is one, which was the Keval Advaita commentary called the Sharirika Bhashya. It was written by Shankaracharya. I'll cover it in my third lecture for one or two slides. And then the second second commentary, which is available right now, is called as Vishishtadvaita. And the commentary name is called as Sri Bhashya. That was the commentary written by Ramanujacharya. Mm-hmm. The third one is Madhvacharya, and his commentary of those four chapters is called as Anubhashya. Okay, so Sharirika Bhashya is of Shankaracharya. Ramanujacharya's is called as Sri Bhashya. Madhvacharya's is called as Anubhashya. And then Nimbarkacharya wrote a commentary for it called as Vedanta Parijata Saurabha. And then there is a fifth commentary which is available now by Vallabhacharya, okay, which is, it is just called as Vallabhabhashya. So I don't know, that maybe some people call that also as Anubhashya, but I don't know. And then our own Bhashya, we have one in our Sampradaya called as the Govinda Bhashya, which was written by Srila Bhaladeva Vidyabhushana. So there are six existing commentaries right now of the Vedanta Sutra. In order for one to be called as a bona fide Sampradaya, then one had to write a commentary for the Vedanta Sutra. That is the reason why when Baladeva Vidyabhushana, when they were questioned whether our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya is a bona fide Sampradaya by the priests in Jayapur, at that time, Baladeva Vidyabhushana said that within 7 days, he will write a commentary. And he wrote the commentary under the dictation of Sri Govinda Dev in Jaipur and wrote the commentary for us called as Govinda Bhashya. Just like how we have Govinda Bhashya, Madhvacharya's commentary is called as Anubhashya. That's the answer.
Perfect. Thanks. Genius. Yes, yes. No. Very nicely explained, Prabhupada. Thank you so much. If you have time, can I ask another question?
Go ahead, Mother. Go ahead.
So you were talking about hierarchies among different, among the living beings. Mm-hmm. So over there, did you say that there is no hierarchy among the different forms of the Lord? Or
correct. According to Tattvavada, there is gradation everywhere except about Vishnu's expansion.
So this would include the expansions of the Lord in the material universe also?
Any incarnation, like if you take, I don't want to use the word material because since the Lord is nothing to do with material, but any incarnation of the Lord, like Hamsa Avatara, if you take, or Krishna, or anybody, there is no difference. So that means like absolutely there is no difference in the qualities, in terms of quality, quantity, anything between Lord Matsya and Lord Rama or Lord Hamsa, like that.
Okay, so that is another main region where we differ from them.
Well,
can we say it
I'll
that
put
way?
It this way? I will keep it this way. All these, what Madhvacharya is saying, there is actually nothing incorrect in any of this. But it is just that there is a part of it that is explained there. And Achintya Bheda Bheda will cover the remaining part as well. So if you see in Achintya Bheda Bheda, see, I didn't want to go into this thing because it is hard. You know, every time when you see a philosophy like this, we want to see what is it that we are understanding versus this. Okay, so that is the complexity in these things. Like Achintya Bheda Bheda is saying that we are absolutely one with Krishna in quality, quantity, in all perspectives, and at the same time, absolutely different. Absolutely different and absolutely one, and at the same time. That is Achintya. But I will come to it in a separate thing. It will really confuse right now. I will not go into that. But if you have any specific things about this Tattvavada, I'll explain. Let's just leave the Achintya Bheda Bheda for now, because Achintya Bheda Bheda is a more elaborate philosophy.
Right.
It's actually easy to understand. It is easy to understand. It is a theistic philosophy. It is one of the most theistic philosophies because it clearly explains the supremacy of God. In fact, if you see the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Udupi temple, at that time, as they were explaining the Tattvavada, Mahaprabhu said that the only thing which he actually agreed with them was that they accepted the form of Krishna as the absolute truth. So you can see that actually in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It will come in the chapter in the South India tour. So,
Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Yes, the chart was very well explained. So it was easy to understand this day.
Thank you, Madhuchi. So in essence, none of this is false. What Madhvacharya is saying, everything is true. It's just that we will see that it is explaining one part of it, because there are other statements in the Vedas which were emphasized by Shankaracharya. Like, for example, if you take Sarvam Kalamidam Brahmam Aham Brahmasmi Tattvamasi, all these statements, they were more enunciated by Shankaracharya. But Madhvacharya is saying that the translations of Shankaracharya for all those things are wrong. And so he gives his own translations, how it should be translated. And he says the only way to see that is that of Tattvavada. So there is one aspect which was covered by Madhvacharya. Another aspect was covered by Shankaracharya. And you will also see that Ramanujacharya also covers a different way of approaching it. Okay, a different aspect. And Achintya Bheda Bheda, you will see that actually takes, you don't have to interpret any statement of the Vedanta in Achintya Bheda Bheda. You can take every statement as it is and still satisfy Achintya Bheda Bheda.
Well, thank you, Prabhuji. It's going to get really confusing after a little bit, but very interesting, extremely interesting.
Okay, yes, but you. I hope that today's presentation, it was not confusing. If you take out our Achintya Bheda Bheda for now, or are there any other philosophy, and if you just look at Tattvavada alone, then the goal of this is to understand Tattvavada. That's what that was the goal of this, but I hope it is not confusing, because if you just look at it strictly without comparing every minute with other philosophies, then today's presentation would be easy to understand.
Absolutely. Yes, Prabhuji. Thank you so much.
Vasundhara Mataji, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranams. Please excuse my agyan, and also excuse me if I'm asking you ignorant questions. Based on the presentation that you've given today, a couple of queries, Prabhuji, on the tattva part. Here we understand, what I understand from your presentation, different degradations or variations between soul and the other souls, material, matter and matter, but no difference in the tattva as such in terms of the various forms, attributes of the Lord in various incarnations.
Correct.
Is my understanding right, Prabhu?
Yeah, correct. Between God and soul, there is a difference. Between soul and soul, there is a difference. Soul and matter and matter, and God
yes.
and matter. But
yeah, so in terms of Vishnu Tattva, no difference. Now, taking this understanding, no difference between Vishnu Tattva, that is various forms and attributes of the Lord is in par with any incarnations therein, when he speaks about liberation being the ultimate goal. So what exactly liberation means here in this Tattva, number one. Number two is that if there is no variations between the different forms of the Lord, attributes of the Lord, spiritual world would mean only one spiritual world, or how is it, Prabhu? Because we understand different spiritual worlds of the various forms of the Lord's incarnations. So here, what do we need to understand? How do we need to understand, Prabhuji?
So Mataji, this is in the Vedanta Sutra. There are four chapters, and one of it, the first chapter, Baladeva Vibhushana, the way he does it is, the first chapter gives an introduction. The second chapter is to do with the approach called as Abhideya. The third chapter is the third chapter, what is the thing with the Lord Madan Mohan? It is
Sambandha.
Okay, the third is Sambandha, which is the relationship with the absolute truth. And the fourth is Prayojana. Okay, so that is the fourth chapter. So these are the four chapters. So if you see the answer to your question, it comes in the fourth chapter. Okay, the Prayojana, what is the end goal in liberation? And that is what is the last sentence which I put here, is that what is liberation is, okay, that you get a direct experience of God's supremacy, and with utmost warmth of love and attraction, that Hari. Okay, so he uses the word Hari here to represent any of the Vishnu Tattva. Okay, the word Hari. Such devotion and this gives salvation. And what is this salvation? The state of salvation, it is spontaneous and end in itself. So that means it's a question of constant devotional service in the Vaikuntha. So that is salvation.
That's like liberation. It is not talking about different types of liberation. It is one liberation which you experience the ultimate bliss. Now, is there any form in place, nama in place, or something like that, Prabhu? For example, devotion. What exactly devotion here does it mean
all
in terms
forms,
of
Mataji,
practice?
All what you're saying, everything is part of it. Everything is part of it. So it is a comprehensive package, devotional package, which in the liberated state.
So there's nothing like one particular form that the devotees in the Madhvacharya Sampradaya follow or something like that. For example, is it Krishna as a form, or Vishnu as a form, or Narayana as a form? It you is treated in par, is it?
Yeah, all you can take, and they don't, it is repugnant to the concept of Tattvavada to distinguish between, let's say, Narasimha and Varaha. It is repugnant.
Okay.
So it means you can, as long as they are Vishnu, as long as they are Vishnu, because he always says that there is a difference between, because all the other beings, including Lakshmi Devi, is Jiva soul. So that means he gives gradation as Mahabharata Tatvaniraya, Lakshmi, after Krishna, Hari comes, then there is the start of the Jiva soul is Lakshmi Devi, and then he gives fold difference rank between Lakshmi Devi, and then to Vayu, and then to Brahma, and then to Shiva. So like this, he gives fold wise rank. It's not just a rank, but he gives a rank among all the Jiva souls. And in Vishnu, there is no difference. So that means like you can approach anybody and follow the same thing. So they are absolutely in quality and quantity, everything, they are identical as far as Vishnu is concerned. That's the only place where he says there is identity.
So that means devotees in Madhvacharya Sampradaya may worship any form of the deity of the Vishnu.
Correct.
And the ultimate goal will be only Vaikuntha.
Correct.
So they don't believe in the existence of multiple Vaikuntha planets at all.
Mataji, there are two different things here. One is called as metaphysics and other is called as theology. Okay.
Okay.
So what you are talking about here is the theology. Okay. So as far as the metaphysics is concerned, it's very elaborately stated there. But as far as the theology is concerned, to an extent it is there, but there's no theology as elaborate as that of our Gaudiya Sampradaya, because the Gaudiya Sampradaya theology is so elaborate. So whatever you're stating, they're all not stated in his commentaries as it is.
Okay.
I don't want to speculate on things that have not been written.
Understand, Prabhuji. Understand.
Okay. And then, if you take our philosophy, we can say that there is a Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu, there is a Kshirodaka Sai Vishnu, there is a Karana Daka Sai Vishnu. So
Karana Daka Sai
Vishnu. Elaborate depiction, even among expansions, have all not been very elaborately covered in the other sampradayas.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Prabhu. And their devotional practices is something very similar to like Nama, what do you call, Nama Mantram or something different, Prabhu?
Every morning they have fire sacrifice, okay, and even they take the ashes from the fire and put that as the central tilak. That is why the tilak is like black in color, if you see.
Right, yes, Prabhu.
Okay, so it's not this, just Krishna Nama alone and all is not there. We have to do everything. You have to do the fire sacrifice, you have to read the Vedas, you have to do all the scriptural practices you have to follow. It is a very elaborate, difficult question.
Elaborate, yes.
It's not like you can just go and just read the philosophy and then be in the Madhva Sampradaya. Madhva Sampradaya involves elaborate effort from the individual.
Okay.
Chanting alone won't do it.
Right. Prabhuji, last one question, Prabhuji. Is the Sampradaya kind of an all-inclusive Sampradaya, like in they accept, embrace all people across faith, or only what you call based on the birth or community specific, Prabhuji?
So, Mataji, there have been each sampradaya sometimes evolves according to time and circumstances. So, for example, in the same Madhva sampradaya, there was they were accepting Brahmana devotees initially, but once after a few hundred years after Madhvacharya, at that time there was a devotee who didn't belong to the Brahmana class, and he wanted to come and see the Udupi temple, the Lord Krishna in Udupi temple. And then when they were not allowed in the temple, the deity of Krishna rotated 90 degree to so that means eventually a sampradaya evolves.
It evolved. Okay.
So okay. It didn't, but initially it was, the purpose of the sampradaya was not to, the purpose of the sampradaya was very clear. Number one, to get rid of Kevala Advaita. Okay, because it was direct opposition to the philosophy.
Shankara's philosophy, yeah.
And number two, to establish the supremacy of Hari or Vishnu. Okay. Number three, to give, and then all others are subsidiary ones, but these two are the main. One is to give a clear translation for the Upanishads, for the Vedanta Sutra, and for some of the Puranas, Mahabharata, which will talk about supremacy of God Hari. That was his main thing, that there was no
compromise.
And the second is to talk about that how, and he in his, if you look at his Anubhashya, you will say that he has taken pages to elaborate every commentary he has, philosophy that was existing at the time, he has taken to say how they were wrong, starting with Buddhism, starting with the Kevala Advaita of Shankaracharya, then Bhaskara's philosophy. Bhaskara, it was like there was a Shaiva Siddhanta philosophy there associated with it. And then there was one, it was called as Beda Beda. And they had something, and he was saying how that is wrong. He went to explain how everything is wrong. And the only thing that is actually correct is absolute Beda, a difference at all levels. And at no point of time we can be equal to Krishna.
Right. Sorry, Prabhuji, one last question, please excuse me. You spoke about the inherent differences amongst the souls eternally also. So does that mean that even after liberation, the differences exist amongst souls?
Correct.
So could you relate with an example? What exactly would those differences mean, Prabhuji?
I'll give you an example, Mataji. That means, let's say there is one liberated Nitya Mukta, eternally liberated living entity there, let's say Hanuman, okay? And let's take another eternally liberated entity there, let's say another person, maybe a certain servant of Lord Rama, for instance. Those two people, Hanuman and that servant, they are, let's say somebody else, let's say Guha, for example. Okay. So they both are different in their spiritual qualities and in quantity in at all levels, absolutely different. So that means that Guha can never exhibit the qualities, and there is a gradation. That means one is able to serve at a higher level compared to the other. So that means, like, let's take our own way. A flower in Vaikuntha and let's say a flute in Vaikuntha are have different attributes in quality and quantity, absolutely.
Right.
That is what it means.
Right. So the ultimate goal of all the jivas will be the same, excepting that the way they are kind of, to the extent they're able to kind of, you know, serve the Lord.
Correct.
And the traits of the jivas in terms of serving service to the Lord, to that extent, not in the tattvam as such. And this will not create any differences between the jivas, like in terms of I'm first, I'm most favorite, I'm not. I mean, nothing of those kind of differences, and creating much more deliberations based on those differences, right, Prabhuji?
Yeah, because they are already liberated. They have no anxiety. They have no. They're all in the liberated state. So they're all they're all absolutely performing their service. But but there's a gradation there.
Got it. Just in terms of the traits, to the extent of the qualities or the percentage of the qualities.
Correct.
To be specific.
Correct.
Fine, Prabhuji.
Yeah. And also the number of qualities. For example, some of them may not even possess some of those qualities. For example, let's take a quality like mercy. Okay, that maybe the mercy quality is not there in a flower. There are, as much as this is, this is absolute difference alone is elaborated here. But you have, you also have absolute oneness as well. That means a tree, okay, just I don't want to do this, but in our philosophy, a tree in Vaikuntha can give apple, but it can also give milk.
Right.
But that and all cannot, that is not how the Vaikuntha in Madhvacharya's Tattvavada is, because there is an absolute difference between one
an apple tree. Okay. got it. So does that mean that the eligibility criteria for a jiva to be eligible for liberation, what would be that measurement criteria? Will that also vary from jiva to jiva, or is that one criteria?
Exactly. That is why this says that some of the jivas are not going to attain liberation no matter what.
Irrespective of their devotional practices, whatever could be the extent of the devotional practices.
Yeah, like for example, those in the mode of goodness have will go either to heaven or get liberated. But those in mode of passion, they are going to stay in this world. You can never convince them of the supremacy of Vishnu. No matter, even if they seem to be convinced today, tomorrow they won't be convinced. So he's saying, but so, you know, in a practical purpose point of view, all this is correct as well. Because if you look at a person, let's say somebody's killing somebody else, and you know, those people, he's saying that they, for all practical purpose, they are going to get going to go towards more hellish existence as time goes, and there is no scope for them.
Fine, Prabhuji. Sorry. Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Manita Gandharika Mataji, please go ahead.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dhanavat Pranam, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for such a beautiful class. I am hearing this one for the first time. I mean, like this in detail from the beginning about the Madhvacharya and everything detail, especially the chart that you have explained, how the differences are there among the souls and among the matter, and what there is no difference between the Vishnu Tattvas. That was the chart really explained very clearly. And Vasundhara Mataji's questions are very, very nice. Very minute question she has raised in, and where I also had that doubt, but I unable to put up my question properly because of that conversation. It really cleared out very clearly, especially you gave that example of our sampradaya, like how we believe in Vaikuntha, like where all the kalpa vrikshas are there, anything can be given in from one tree, but here they believe like apple tree is only apple. So that difference, when you explained it, more clearly understood, Prabhuji, what you are exactly explaining. Thank you so much, Prabhu. Will you share this PPTs with us, Prabhu?
Yeah,
thank you, Prabhuji. Very grateful to you. Hare Krishna.
The thing I didn't want to do is actually compare it with Achintya Bhairava because it becomes very complex in that way today, at least as of today. But if you pick this as the summary, it will be great. Okay, because here it's a question of material or in spiritual domain, there is absolute difference in quality and quantity. In Shankaracharya's philosophy, there is absolute oneness. In Achintya Bheda Bheda, we have absolute difference and absolute oneness simultaneously and inconceivably. But I do not want to talk about Achintya Bheda Bheda today because it's a more elaborate philosophy. We will do that in the third session.
But thank you, Prabhuji, for giving the glimpse of it so that we will understand. Because our mind always goes to our philosophy and then comes here, it's confusing. As you said, we have to come with a plain mind and then hear it. It will directly go into the brain. Thank you so much,
all
Prabhuji.
All this, Mataji, is everything that Madhvacharya is saying, there is nothing wrong in it. Everything is correct. The only thing is, it explains part of it. It explains the Bheda part alone of the relationship between Jiva, matter and absolute. So there is nothing wrong in Madhvacharya cannot say anything wrong because he was a great devotee of the Lord and a direct representative of the Lord. So nothing that he can say can be wrong. But he explained he had a necessity at that time because of the constant onslaughts from the Mayavada community about Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya, that Brahman is true and the world is false. He had to give a philosophy to glorify the Supreme Lord Hari and at the same time explain the philosophy that to make people understand that they can never be Krishna at any time. That was his goal. His goal was he is the best of the theist because he wanted to establish the supremacy of Lord Vishnu. That was his goal. So there is not one thing in what he said is wrong, but it is explaining part of the absolute truth.
Yeah. That's why it is very clearly saying that in Vishnu Tattvas, there is no differences among why Masya or Rama that you put in a slide. So that way it explains that how great the philosophy is like to make the supremacy of the Lord and make the differences between the Jiva and this Lord. Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Very clearly explains. Very beautiful, Prabhuji.
You can see that there are differences between living entities all the time. You can see that. So, there is nothing wrong in it. You can see that there is absolutely difference between one living entity and another living entity. But at the same time, there is absolute oneness. That part is the most intriguing part, which will be covered. I'll do that in the third lecture in the Sarvasambhadini of Jiva Goswami. I will take shlokas there and I will show you how both are seeing at the same time. It is so hard to understand that how there is absolute difference at the same time, and the same time is absolute oneness as well. So there is we and Krishna are absolutely one and there is no difference between Krishna and us. But at the same time, we are absolutely different from Krishna as well. And but any of the things, please don't take that what Madhvacharya is saying here is any of it is wrong because everything is correct. Everything is correct, but it partly explains the absolute truth.
Mm-hmm.
And Bhaktivinoda Thakur clearly says that. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he takes the tenets from all the things to show that Achintya Bheda Bheda is a natural explanation for the Vedanta Sutra. Any other question?
Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you so much. Just now I was thinking of something and it went away. Okay. Yeah, maybe it is like a time, place and circumstances to just remove away the Shankaracharya's philosophy. That's when this Madhvacharya has given us this knowledge. Like that,
it's required, Mataji, because if somebody constantly keeps telling there is nobody called Krishna, it is all illusion, my world doesn't exist, then what would you do? You need a philosophy which is exactly opposing that. That is how people will even listen to you. You cannot have a wishy-washy philosophy, something say, oh, maybe this, maybe that. That was for a different time. It was needed. So at that time, this is what is needed. This is what is needed and it is not wrong. None of these philosophies will be wrong. If you see that, you will see that Vishishtadvaita is correct. Madhvacharya's Tattvabada is also correct. And all these philosophies are fully correct in its own right, except that they explain part of it.
Got it, Prabhuji. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, Mataji, you have again question. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm just following up very quickly with Basundhara Mataji's question about the difference in the inherent differences in the soul. I know you're going to cover this later in the third session, but just to follow up on what you told her in this class, is it that, according to Madhvacharya, the differences in the jivas is the nature of the services that they offer, or does it go deeper than that?
Can you repeat that last sentence, Mataji? In the nature of what?
Yeah. Is it in the nature of the services only that make for the differences in the jivas, or is it more profound than that?
No, it is constitutionally different. Like, for example, there is a reason why you are here in this forum and somebody else is not. Because that somebody else constitutionally cannot attend this program because they don't have those attributes.
And that's a constitutional difference. And so I guess later you will show how it is that part of his philosophy is actually a truth. Because according to what we've learned, that is not true.
No. Okay, Mataji, I'll put it this way. Okay, so if you practically see Mataji, okay, see, there are ways by which we... So in essence, whether somebody is a mode of goodness, passion, ignorance, it doesn't matter. Nobody really has a scope unless there is unless they come in contact with some kind of a Vaishnava who is able to help them in this process. Okay. But in a practical sense, those who are in a mode of ignorance, okay, what is the chance that they actually have? Unless they come in contact with a devotee or something, what is the chance that they actually have? It is negligible.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with their constitutional nature, though.
Okay, so, that you get, because that is, Mataji, if it has nothing to do with the constitutional nature, if you take the, here we are talking about material qualities, okay? So if you take material qualities, okay, because their spiritual qualities is different topic, material qualities is different topic. If you take the material qualities into picture alone, okay, so somebody who's used to, let's say, constantly gambling,
there's no scope.
Practically speaking, so that is what Madhvacharya is saying here.
My question about this inherent difference in the jivas, I'm always talking about our spiritual constitutional nature only. I've made a point of saying that I'm talking about that, not the material. Obviously, materially speaking, we're vast, there's big differences among us, We know that that's just a covering. So that's why Madhvacharya, he's saying that the spiritual nature is constitutionally different one from another, no?
Yeah, because even among the liberated souls, there is a gradation. But that means that there are some souls which will have inherently more difficulty in getting liberated, according to Madhvacharya. In one sense, it is, you can say that if you look at it from one angle, it won't be wrong about that. That's what I'm saying here. So I think it'd be very hard to go and say that why, in what all ways it is. All I'm telling here is, let's not look at it and think that we disagree with all these things what he has said. Instead of that, we say that if you look at it in from one angle, you will be able to see what Madhvacharya is saying. But if we look at it from a different angle, then you will see what Shankaracharya is saying. But then if you look at it holistically, then you'll be able to combine everything.
Well, this is a I don't think we made any progress here, but maybe in the third session, you will.
I would really say, Mataji, is the purpose of this today's session is not to compare it every time with Achintya Bhairabheda. If you do that, we won't be able to get what Madhvacharya is trying to say here. The purpose of today is to just focus on the Tattvavada and just take it as it is. What is it that he's saying? And that is that of pure Veda. That is all. But it is natural for us to compare with what we learn in. What we learn every time is what we are learning and what Madhvacharya is saying. But if we do that for everything, then understand.
I got that point. But it's because you said that we have to understand that everything that Madhvacharya said is true. I was just trying to see how it is true. Because when you were speaking with the other Mataji, Vasundhara Mataji, you know, you were bringing out these points.
No, Mataji. If it is when you say true, I'm not saying that there is another part of it as well. So it is true in a context. Okay, as far as the pure Veda is concerned, it is true. But there is what is not seen here is the pure Abheda part, pure non-difference. That part is left out here. That is where the reconciliation happens.
Okay, Prabhu. Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna, dear devotees, once again, I would like to thank His Grace Jayanand Prabhuji for his valuable time and wonderful association today. Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for a very wonderful class and a very nice PPT. Please do share it with us. Looking forward to your association next Friday. I would like to pay my obeisances to all the assembled devotees and His Grace Jayanand Prabhuji. Do I have your permission to close the call, Prabhuji?
Thank you, Mataji.
Panchakalpitarubhyascha kripa sindhu eva cha patirna bhavanega vishnubhyo namo namah ananta kutipi vishnubhindi ki jai namah namah charidas thakur ji ki jai shri prabhupad ki jai His Grace Jayanand Prabhu ji ki jai
jai.